Greg Council. Greg oversees
conference
the
record has joined the conference.
Greg oversees the product direction, including the definition and delivery of Periscope's image processing and recognition products. He's got over 15 years of experience delivering software products and services, and he has over 10 years of experience redefining and delivering solutions within the image and document processing area. So we welcome Greg as our featured speaker today. We actually have a very active agenda, and to keep you on your toes, we are giving away three prize drawings during the webinar. Three of them are the LiveScribe 4GB Echo Smart Pen, which is kind of a cool organizational pen which enables you to actually convert handwriting into text and use it as an organizational tool. Also, you'll have the ability to download a white paper, Increase Security Through Signature Verification Technology, written by Periscope. Now, you can access these files on the upper right-hand side there. You can see the little icon which allows you to download some of the information. We've got a few brochures on there. And also, after the webinar, we'll present you with an email with that information as well. Up above to the upper left-hand side there, you see the question and answer side. So feel free to chat with us throughout the seminar or throughout the conference, and we'll respond to those accordingly. So today's agenda, we've got a lot of information that we'd like to present to you. So the slides at times may be a little bit busy, but we'll hit on the key points to keep it focused for you. We've got information on the ABA 2011 Deposit Fraud Account Survey. We'll provide some analysis from an Orbigraph perspective as well as from our analysts. The exploration of forgeries, counterfeits, and alterations is kind of an interesting topic, and that will set the stage for man versus machine, who's actually better from a signature verification standpoint. Looking at some other opportunities to leverage the signature for an authentication tool. And then finally, what are some ideas to overcome the challenges that we all experience in the industry relating to implementing these technologies? So about Orbigraph, most of you know Orbigraph. We're a check recognition is where we got our start. We leveraged that into image analysis. Some of the things that we do is add value by implementing multiple modules, multiple toolkits under an umbrella product, and then we bring all those results together through a process called multi-source correlation modeling. Sereno is our fraud solution, which is actually distributed through data support systems, as well as Memento, now a division of FIS. We've got a pretty robust set of business resellers out there, and those folks who have our packages and our recognition products certified in their product line. And for today's purposes, we're going to be talking a lot about the topic of image analysis, focusing on automated signature verification. So for those of you who are new to this topic, you know, image analysis is basically the ability to interrogate all the different fields on the check and use that for a variety of different purposes. Today, of course, we're focusing on the bottom right-hand side, which is where Periscope has a lot of expertise. Periscope is certainly one of our engines built into our solution offering. And so with that, I'll pass it over to Greg, who can tell you a little bit about Periscope.
Thanks, Joe. For those of you that know us, you probably know us from our ability to read handwriting on checks, but we do a lot more. At Periscope, we specialize in what we call image processing and object recognition. Now, we develop these enabling technologies so that solution providers worldwide can use them to power applications such as forms processing, Check 21, fraud prevention, and even medical imaging and postal automation, just to name a few types of applications. Now, these applications take advantage of our image recognition capabilities and our comprehensive character recognition that includes handwriting, cursive, and machine print. A little more on the fraud side, we offer two award-winning biometric technologies that enable solutions to locate, capture, and verify signatures in both online environments, such as signature verification on an iPad, and offline environments, such as image-based signature verification on checks. And now back to you, Joe.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And so what we're going to do in the beginning here is we're going to focus on the ABA study, and what we're trying to do is understand what some of the trends are in the marketplace and how that relates to a need that we can solve with automation, and see what the best way to solve some of these problems are. So many of you are familiar with the ABA study. 2011 was the latest one where it came out with looking at a variety of different payment mechanisms. We're, of course, going to be focusing on the check here. And the data itself is from 2010. That's the latest. So we'll compare that to 2008 data as well so you can get a flavor for what's happening in the marketplace. The survey is actually based on a statistical sampling. So there were 117 full participants and 68 took a shorter version of the survey. And you can see how the designations are for community bank, mid-size, regional, as well as the large financial institutions. To start off with, from a very high level, the attempts actually had a very minor reduction of check fraud attempts. We went from 11.4 billion to 11 billion in attempts, which is about a 4% reduction. Now, this year, we see that the losses actually declined from 1 billion down to 893 million. And as on a percentage basis, it's kind of interesting because when you look at how that breakdown is, 62% are now designated as consumer accounts, whereas 21% were on small business. So you've had a little bit of a shift there in terms of the percentage of fraudulent activities being more concentrated on the business side, and then identity theft took kind of a big jump as well. Now, when you look at those numbers, you know, 893 million is still a major problem. The good news is that on a whole, each one of the categories experienced a reduction. Now, in particular, there was some pretty big reductions at the community bank level, under 500 million. That can be attributed potentially to a couple of things. You know, one is that some of the fraudsters did not go downstream as predicted, and we'll show you some numbers there as well. But also, we have a relatively small sampling in this particular area out of the whole. So we know that there's a lot of deviations between community banks. Some of them actually have fairly high losses for those in the bigger cities. Some of them have smaller losses for those in the rural environments. And so there are some things to consider there. But anyways, the bottom line is that on a whole, everyone had some minor reductions. And then when you look at it, some additional breakdowns, you can look at the case differences. Now, a case is a particular scenario that actually gets reviewed within the bank and potentially has litigation following up with that, with law enforcement and so forth. Everyone was down to some extent in the number of cases. What you can see here is that this is a difference. So, you know, the numbers are pretty small here on the lower end scale. But what's kind of interesting at the super regional and the money center banks is they actually, on a median basis, the average right in the middle, there were more cases, a good bit more cases, 13% more of prosecution. So what does that imply? It implies that maybe the big banks went after some additional losses more aggressively on a whole, whereas some of the larger ones maybe had less activity going on. So when you look at overall then, what does it mean from the net numbers? Well, we thought the shift was going to be actually downward. You know, we thought that the fraudsters, a lot of the consultants had said, you know what, fraudsters are moving downstream. And what turned out happening is that the concentrations actually went up. So the larger super regionals and money center banks now comprise a greater percentage of the check fraud that's out there. Okay? So overall, you know, with almost a 13% reduction in check fraud, the question is, why did the decline happen? And so, you know, we see and our analysts see from a number of different scenarios that, first of all, systems are improving. You know, analytic systems, image analysis systems are getting better and better, and the product adoption continues to increase as well, especially at the community bank. There are some vendors out there who have many new system implementations, so that's certainly making a dent from that standpoint. There's greater awareness, certainly, on this particular topic. And basically, I think in the beginning now, these faster check clearing rules that have been implemented as a part of Reg CC have actually helped the process somewhat. Now, we'll see if that trend continues, but those are some of the initial factors. You know, can we say that the volume decline in checks actually had an impact in fraud reduction? I think the answer there is no, because we saw decline in volumes from the last study from 2009, which was 2008 data, but the fraud went up. So I don't think we can necessarily correlate that. The other question is, are the other payment channels potentially less protected? If you look at some of the details within the study itself, it basically shows that there's a lot more banks without protection on their ATMs. The adoption of protection in some of their other platforms is kind of lagging, maybe on the RDC side. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there and whether the fraudsters will go back downstream or not. Now, there were some other questions that we have a consultant we work with, Jody Pratt, who posed to us, and we chatted with her a little bit about how are these institutions classifying the fraud, and is it actually a reduction in check, but is there any shifting going on? For example, how are we measuring check to ACH conversion? Is that contributing to the ACH fraud, whereas it was originating as a check? The deposit fraud. We think that that number as a percentage basis should actually be reflected larger. So maybe there's a tracking issue and a consistency issue there. And last but not least, we have debit card losses. That certainly went up significantly this last year. But how much of that actually was originated from a deposited check? So those are some of the questions that we have regarding that. And I think, you know, it's when you look at the mix of how this breaks down, you can see here that for the deposit fraud, which is the blue areas here, in many of these, you're only talking about 30% at the bigger bank, 40%. Most of the time when we speak to financial institutions, that number is more like 50 to 60. So it could be some of the other categories that are split out. The other thing to notice on this is that from an image analysis side, and from a check fraud side on the on us, you know, they're still prevalent. There's still very significant opportunities on a percentage basis. These counterfeits and forgeries are still little buggers that are out there, and that gives opportunity for improvements in systems. Now, from an ABA standpoint, the respondents were actually surveyed as well. What are the top 12 risks that you see on your deposit accounts? And certainly there's somewhat no surprises here. The debit card fraud, victimization schemes have actually kicked back in pretty strongly. ACH origination, where you're needing some additional technology to address those issues. Cross-channel fraud was a big one. That was brought up by a number of banks. And deposit fraud at the bigger bank level was highlighted as one of the top risks. Other items were the duplicate issue, which we know in RDC does pop up occasionally. One of the things that folks communicated was that they expect an increase in check volumes in new channels. So that's RDC and mobile and some additional volumes as it relates to the ATM side. Okay, new account fraud, that's always an issue that needs to be dealt with. So, you know, we can say that the check fraud is a bit more controlled compared to the last study. Does it mean we solved it? Well, not necessarily. And I think the responses of the concerns in do you predict losses to be higher or lower next year also indicates this. Remember, this is from the participants of the survey. And what this chart represents is they expect that for each category, this is the percentage of the folks who predicted a higher amount of fraud, and the green represents a lower amount. So when you look at this trend of this particular slide, it's pretty obvious that most of the people who responded think that the fraud is going to be the same or greater for their organization, which is, you know, pretty much a validation that we still have a little bit of work to do out there. All right, so that concludes the initial analysis of the ABA piece. We wanted to ask you, what check fraud category is the highest concern for your organization in 2011? Basically, just click on the particular color that best corresponds to your thoughts for your organization. The red is counterfeits. The blue are forgeries. The yellow is deposit fraud. The green, alterations. The purple are insufficient funds. And the orange is you're not really as much concerned about check fraud coming up in 2012. So we'll wait for just a second here for folks to finish up their responses. A few more coming in. Again, the question is, what check fraud category is the highest concern for your organization in 2012? Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the polls, and I will show you the results here. As you can see, counterfeits are up there and right there with deposit fraud. So that's kind of an interesting trend. The forgeries is still strong. So thank you for your responses in that regard. And now we're going to move into our first drawing. This is the prize drawing for the LiveScribe 4-gigabyte Echo Smart Pen. And Nicole, are you on the line?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
For our first winner, we have Melanie Hunt of M&T Bank.
Okay, excellent. So we'll be getting that off to you after the webinar. So let's move on to some of these additional fraud types. You know, we just saw that there were some concerns for deposit fraud and also still for forgeries and counterfeits. You know, each one of these fraudulent types of categories has their own classifications. And you, for those of you who are on the call who are experts in this field, it's no surprise that, you know, it can be very challenging to identify these particular different types. You know, sometimes a forgery is a skilled forgery or an unskilled forgery. And marrying a technology that you can compare a profile image versus a check that's submitted for payment that has different attributes is challenging because it's not always blatant. You know, sometimes it's just a situation where the account may be starting new checks. And if you flagged everything, the number of false positives would be through the roof. So what you have to do is, in order to have the most efficient system, is have the best technology, obviously, but you need to look for all these attributes and build those in. So if you have a product, let's say like Memento, who has data analytics, you can tie in the image analysis piece of that and essentially utilize the results of each one of these engines on an individual basis and help the scoring of the analytics side. Within the Sereno piece, for example, for DSS, we have it very tightly integrated across to all levels. And a good example of that for either one of those cases is this scenario here where you end up with an item that's out of range for a particular dollar amount for this account. And in this example here, you know, it gets a score of 15. Now, this particular account may have a fair number of checks that occasionally hit that range, and pretty much they may or may not be fraudulent. Let's say, in fact, most of them aren't. So one of the ways that you could look at this is to say, hey, is this a forgery type of item? And when you look at the forgery score here, you get a relatively low score of 21 from a matching standpoint. And Greg's going to get into that in a minute. And so in this particular example here, this item ended up with a score of 14, and you would flag this item for a review. So that's some of the sophistication that's really needed when you merge various types of image analysis with the data analytics piece, or also referred to as fraud filters. Now, the opportunities for image analysis, you know, from a surveying standpoint, 42% of the banks still applied some kind of random signature verification piece. That essentially means that there were quite a few of them who did not have an automated system in place. Pretty much everybody, although not everyone, applies a large dollar verification That's a manual process. 58% of the super regionals use check stock validation, but only 17.4% or 27% overall. And lastly, Payoneer verification is adopted in some of the markets more strongly, whereas in others, not so much. So you end up with this this marketplace where there's still a lot of opportunities to plug in improvements. And so if we were to summarize these three sections here together, we'd have to say that, first of all, honest fraud prevention, generally speaking, with this technology, is probably easier than deposit fraud detection and prevention. So there are some strategies that you can deploy that leverage this. First of all, build up your honest defenses. You know, there's a number of areas where over-the-counter checks can be improved, ATMs, RDCs, and better approaches on the in-clearing. For example, run it on day one. Now, when you do that, you can utilize Reg CC availability schedules to your advantage. You know, doubtful collectability items, you can certainly hold. That gives you a greater window for returns as well. Because when you think about it as a returning financial institution, it kind of works to your advantage. There are still returns that take several days, and if that's the process for returned items, then fraud is going to win pretty much every time there. Leverage the technologies for honest deposit. We talked about that. And Jody Pratt says, look at your exchanges with the different organizations and look for partnerships. The concept there is that my deposit fraud or your deposit fraud is my honest fraud and vice versa. And so what you can do is work relationships where maybe you review the other bank's items quicker. And if they're doing the same for you, you can close that gap on the honest deposit fraud mix and potentially move that up into your processes day one and put holds on the suspect accounts, and you would have very little impact on the crediting of the accounts to the or the balances to those particular accounts. So it's a very effective way to do it, and I think the way to implement it is to phase it in. Okay, so it's time for another polling question. What is your organization's largest check fraud system concern? Okay. The answers there are you create too many false positives. The blue is you do not catch enough of your fraud items. That's referred to as false negatives. Greg will be touching on that coming up. You have an antiquated system philosophy. The green is you have only a modest concern and you just would like to have more features. The purple is you have a modest concern and you want to add image analysis. And lastly, the orange is basically you don't have any concerns about check fraud coming up. So a few final responses coming in here. Again, what is your organization's largest check fraud system concern? System concern. All right, so I'm going to close the polls, and then I'm going to show the results. And there you have it. 34% basically say there's too many false positives, and 23% say there's not enough detection going on there. So a couple primary concerns, and then the image analysis looks like a modest concern that folks would like to add. So good responses. Thank you very much for that. And with that, now what I'd like to do is pass it over to Greg Counsell, who's going to tell us a little more about some tests about man versus machine, who's better, and representing the machine. Greg Counsell.
Thanks, Joe. And just one thing to say, while I do represent the machine, I want everybody to know that I am not a machine. I just play one on webinars. So if there's distrust there, just know I'm one of you. So getting into, before we get into the competition, I want to do a level set and walk through everyone the typical types of signature forgeries typical in the industry. Now, there's a lot of research around the types of signature forensics and handwriting forensics and things like that. And what's more common or mostly common are essentially three types of fraud. What you'll see here is this first row shows the genuine customer signature. Now, against the genuine customer signature, the second row will show a random forgery. Now, they're often just, random forgeries are often just a signature that may or may not even resemble the forged signature, and it actually may not even be the same name at all. And the gambit here that the fraudster's taking is that the signature will go unnoticed, so that it just slips through, it's a low dollar amount, and then they'll be able to pass it. Now, stepping up a bit is what we call the blind forgery, and this is the third row. As you can see here, the signatures will start to resemble the names, but they're often the right name, but they don't really resemble the authentic signature. So there is a big level of disparity in the look and feel and the pen strokes and everything with respect to genuine signatures. And the last one, and is probably easily the hardest to detect, and luckily is less frequent, is what is called the skilled forgery. In these instances, the fraudster understands really common ways to copy a signature and may even implement variations in that signature just to try to pull deeper analysis. And again, these are the most rare, which is lucky for us, but we want systems that can resolve and analyze all of these. So what really makes the task of signature verification so difficult? The main issue is that genuine signatures often have a lot of variation that make recognizing a forgery from the real thing very difficult. And there are many aspects to that. Signatures typically are made up of what we call unstable elements, which can change or not even be present. Now, some examples of that are, you know, of that acceptable variation include middle initials, which may be present on the original signature card, but are typically not present in real transactions, the slant of the signature, and the weight of the pen stroke. These deviations can depend on a number of valid factors, including mood, an environment, and the writing instrument. An example would be signatures that can vary depending on where the person is signing, with factors such as placement of the document. Are they writing sitting up? Are they writing standing up? Are they writing with the document on a pedestal? Is it on the hood of a car? And even lighting. So is it dim lighting where they can't see their signature very well? Some people don't really do well when they can't see their own writing. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration. Now, the two largest types of forgeries that we're going to deal with today and that are the subject of our competition rely around the types of forgeries and the difficulty discerning between authentic and forged signatures. So in these two areas are the forgery that is accepted against one that is rejected. So I think we talked about this as false positives and false negatives. And, you know, those are two typical industry terms. So I don't think that most people on this webinar need to be educated on that. But these are the two areas that I'm going to show in graphs and talk more in-depthly around how well machines do compared to humans. So understanding the real rate of both of these scenarios is really crucial to successful implementation of any verification process. And these two errors will be reviewed within the context of our results, so I want to make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about here. Now on to the competition. So for this competition, we conducted two tests. In one corner are college-educated operators trained in forensic techniques used to discern between common forgeries. Now these were not signature experts, but they were well-trained to find typical areas that could dictate or indicate whether a signature is authentic or is fraudulent. We also wanted to pick people that do represent a skill level beyond what most bank staff have, just so we can raise the level of competition against this machine. In the other corner is our signature expert technology, which is our core recognition technology for static or image analysis of signatures. Now, these tests covered two types of forgeries, again. They were the hard-to-discern skilled forgeries and the relatively easier random or unskilled forgeries. So we looked at both. We separated the tests to see how the machines could do against the humans. Now, in both, the objective was to accept the highest percentage of authentic signatures and so that we could reduce the false positives while at the same time rejecting as many forgeries. And now on to the results. Now this graph showing verification performance at first glance looks pretty complex. And so this one is looking at skilled forgeries. But let me draw your attention to some of the key areas. And I'm going to do it with some of these little fancy tools here. So the real identifier of success is to stay as close to this zero percentage line as possible through every type of check. So if you're looking along the y-axis here, this represents the number of forgeries that we're allowed to go through, the percentage, if you will. So arguably or obviously, we want to keep to the 0%, while at the same time accepting every authentic signature that we have and reduce those false positives. So this is our bar. And what we see here are a sample of six users compared against our signature expert technology. Now, in practice, no real operator ever did better than identifying and preventing about 45%, this line right here, of all fraudulent signatures. Now, many did much worse. So you can see here, there was one operator that was really good, or relatively really good, compared to others. These guys here started at the 85% line and went up. So what they're really doing is they're not able to detect these forgeries against real authentic signatures, and these forged signatures are going through. Now, that's a whole lot of potential loss there. Now, let's look at the machine side. We could realize acceptance rates of the same 93%. So if we're looking at this 93% line for comparison, only 20% of those forged signatures are going through. Now, remember, these are skilled forgeries, so they're hard to detect and they're relatively infrequent. But you can see this massive difference between the best operator in our test and the other operators and the machine itself. So the summary of this slide is the machine does well and the humans do worse than even basic probability. You can imagine here, it's probably better in this scenario to just flip a coin, but we don't want to do that. Now on to random or unskilled forgeries. Many studies suggest that random and unskilled forgeries account for better than 95% of all forgeries, and arguably humans should do much better with detecting these, especially employees who can't be considered to be experts. But when you're looking at signatures that may not even be the same name, logic dictates that they should do well. But again, keeping in mind that the green mark down here represents perfection, let's see how well the machine did compared to the human. Looking at this acceptance rate down here at 95%, this is what I'm going to compare against, we have less than 1% error. In fact, in many cases, the error or the amount of forgeries that aren't detected is so low that you don't even see it on this graph. We'd have to blow it up to a larger set of numbers. And moving up this curve, a 97% acceptance rate with 3% error up here, this error line, still yields just under 5% missed forgeries. Realizing how your distribution of checks might be, I'm sure a lot of you can see but there's a lot of area for automation, completely automating a lot of your check and signature verification processes, especially when you compare it to us humans. So let's look at the operator. The operators start out at about 4%. So there are variations in different operators, but the best of them, which you can't see here, was just this pink line, just under the 5% rating. That's pretty good, and at a 95% acceptance rate. But look what happens when you try to get and reduce that number of false positives. The error rate or the number of forgeries that aren't detected shoots through the roof, rapidly rising to about 50% and greater. If you want to move to the 98% line, where the systems, the machines, can still get about 12%, we see that they're taking just about everything that they see, which is practically almost worthless in terms of being able to detect this fraud. So what system would you put your trust into? Now, one thing that I do want to talk about is the trade-off between genuine acceptance versus forgery acceptance. And I know that the survey said that, you know, the top two topics were you want to minimize the false positives while also minimizing the amount of forgeries that get through, or minimizing the, or, you know, increasing the number of forgeries that are detected. It's pretty much always a trade-off, and these lines show that. Looking at the blue line representing the machine, this guy right here, you can see that depending on your business and the evaluation within your business of the frequency of forgeries and the types of forgeries that are hard to detect, you might choose many different places along this curve to achieve the results you believe are good for your operation. So do you believe that 95% acceptance with doing exception handling for that other 5% is good to achieve a less than 1% fraud rate? I think a lot of people would accept that. If you want to go into more and you've got more capable systems, you're adding more fraud detection, such as what Overdraft offers with its Sereno product line, you could probably move in here. Just on signature verification, you can see 97% still yields less than 5% fraud. But it's really dependent on your own business. Now, the software itself enables these thresholds. So anything that you want to pick out here, the software can certainly support. And if you want to apply other filters to automate these lower value transactions, you can certainly do that. And in case anybody has doubts about how this plays in the real world, these are two examples of customers that we receive. So when our system software is going to production, we work a lot with images that are, you know, so that we can continuously improve our product, and we'll get access and they'll share this information to us. So these are two examples. One is an example of a rejected genuine signature, and you can see here, many of you might say, well, you know, that looks a lot like the original signature. You know, there's even the middle initial here, but maybe the presence of the middle initial made the person reviewing it look at it and say, no, I think that may be a fraudulent signature, and they rejected it. And at the same time, here's an example of an accepted random forgery where the original name here doesn't look anything like the forgery, but still it was accepted and it went through. The machine is capable of looking at all these variations and processing them to make a decision. And more about why the difference. What makes a machine perform better than human operators? And there are a number of points to cover here. The first is the software that drives the automated solution is based upon a number of mathematical algorithms that are designed to embed and emulate the expertise of real handwriting forensic experts. So the machine is representative of a whole body of scientific work designed at understanding the differences and variations of handwriting, which includes signatures. Now, building on this ability is the ability to adjust for deviations that should be expected versus those that indicate a forgery. So, again, my examples earlier, a human being might be looking at the wrong types of deviations to make good judgment. And that certainly is something that the machine can do a lot better at. The machine can also take an outcome and provide confidence levels. So if you want to tune the system to handle exceptions and handle different types of items in different ways, you can do that, and you can make it consistent. But you can't really do that very well and achieve that same level of consistency with human beings. And lastly, machines can use many different authentic reference images to improve accuracy. So the more reference signatures, if you're concerned about that a signature might have changed over time, you can continuously collect authentic signatures and add them to the machine, and the machine will do better. But you can't expect the same thing to happen with humans. If you handle a person more than three or four images to compare, it's going to be very confusing, and actually their performance will decrease. So all this really equals superior performance right out of the box for the machine. On the human side, we're affected by a number of variables, including things like level of expertise. Are you adequately trained? Can you see the images very well? Are we tired? Our mood, you know, our health, are we feeling bad? You know, we all know that we don't do work as well when we're not feeling well. And again, the environment in which we work. So is the lighting okay? Is it a stressful environment? All these things can factor in, and these things just don't affect the machine. So how does Periscript technology feed humans? So we're talking about just the signature verification side. So this slide enumerates through a number of different techniques, and believe me, there are more, employed to mimic the best of what the human brain can provide. And needless to say, we have a whole other list of things that we have within the software. But three key areas to highlight are the use of a proprietary special descriptive language, use of what we call signature segmentation to look at it in more detail, and then pumping all this information through neural networks. Now, these three key ingredients, when combined with what I call considered a stellar supporting cast of other complementary technologies, really drives a reliable and thorough verification engine. So I'd like to discuss in a little bit more depth three primary and unique technologies that we employ within our product: XR elements, signature fragments comparison, and those neural networks. Now, the first area involves the same core technology involved with all of our handwriting recognition software. This approach uses a special descriptive language, and you can see elements of that descriptive language right here, these little odd-looking hieroglyphs. This is our special language based on a set of formative characters, or what we call XR elements. Now, essentially, this technology has identified the DNA of handwritten characters, and we can reverse engineer that DNA into corresponding letters and numbers. Now, we have defined 64 of these elements that identify unique character motions that can be used in any combination to form all the letters used in handwriting, including signatures. But suspect and reference signatures are presented as sequences of XR elements and compared using multiple factors. So what you're seeing here is a comparison between two signatures and how we draw lines to compare the various elements in here. So from top to bottom, we can connect the dots, if you will. Another analysis applied is that that's complementary to our XR element transformation is the signature fragment comparison. So this method uses algorithms to look at fragments of the reference and suspect signatures. And there are other analyses applied in addition to these, all of which make use of neural networks to compare more than 30 different characteristics of the image, including things like aspect ratio, orientation, glance curves, and a lot of other characteristics. These neural networks essentially recreate the best intuition experience of skilled forensic handwriting experts. And together, they use these combination of methods to successfully distinguish between variations in a person's handwritten signature. So all of these are the big guys, and these are the key enabling capabilities and techniques that we really use to drive success within our core technology. But the technology improves. Over the past several years, we've witnessed improvements of up to 25% in detection and a 50% reduction in false positives. So the good news here is that for those of you that are really concerned with those two elements, the software and technology has been keeping up and, you know, is in a state, current state of the art, to meet the needs of current fraud detection worries and concerns. This is largely due to improved core analysis technology. It also includes, you know, scoring capabilities coupled with advances such as what Overgraph can provide in their ability to build accurate profiles. So all of this information is used in concert to create a holistic solution that can improve results and has improved results over the last several years. And because our core signature analysis software uses neural networks and a design to mimic the human brain, it can be continuously improved and trained. And examples of training that improve these results include things like expanded support of European-style signatures, which differ from U.S. signatures in that they often bear very little resemblance to a person's actual name. They're more like pictograms. Additionally, the systems can be continuously trained to understand when to look for more than one candidate signature, to locate them, and to analyze them separately. Use of different types of signatures or more than one signature are very common in other parts of the world. And lastly, while not as complex as neural networks, image processing is a science and an art unto itself. Improvements in this arena include abilities to locate signatures in more random and complex documents, such as applications, and the ability to remove the unwanted information, Now, even complex stamps, such as those used by notaries prior to signature analysis. And this technology continues to mature and improve, and is definitely going places. So there are many benefits of the machine. First, because machines don't tire and can scrutinize images in a variety of very discrete ways, you can apply verification on 100% of your transactions. Additionally, machines can do all of this in a fraction of the time it takes for visual verification, and more complex rules can be added and automated, such as dollar thresholds. And certainly offloading this complex and time-consuming task opens up the conversation on how valuable staff can be allocated to revenue-generating services. So who really wins, and how can business take advantage? You know, this isn't a case, getting back to the humans versus machines storyline, this isn't a case of the matrix and where the machines will run everything and tell us what to do. Now, while software does offer concrete improvements over human-based signature verification, there still are unique capabilities where each side brings to the table. But because this is a contest, we have to crown a winner, and that's pretty easy to do given the data. When it comes to accuracy, low error rates, and automation, the machine definitely wins. Machines simply do much better than its human counterparts with random forgeries, skilled forgeries, and can apply analysis to every image and do it in a fraction of the time and cost. Add to this that the more reference signatures supplied to the machine, the more accurate the answers become, and you have a world-class competitor. Humans just simply can't effectively compare more than a few reference signatures, and the more presented can actually increase errors. Now, but for the human element, it's still very valuable. The value is really putting the right staff at the right place when people-related work is required. In the case of signature verification, the best use of our brains is to handle escalation. You know, those looking through those documents that are rejected or do not pass a confidence threshold and require someone to more actively investigate a transaction. Things like running tasks that might entail calling the parties involved and reviewing other documentation. These things still require us. But can we ever achieve 100% automation? It just really depends on the nature and needs of your business operation. Thanks, Joe. Back to you.
All right, Greg, excellent job. So we're right on time here. The remaining sections and portions of the webinar will address some signature authentication opportunities, talk a little bit about the workflows that can apply to, identify the challenges, and then we'll go with our closing and draw the final recipients of the last two pens. So let's touch base here on signature authentication. You know, using this powerful database of profiles that you could have within your bank of all your customers and using it in other areas. And, you know, one of our conferences that we had a guest speaker, Robert Siciliano of ID Theft Security, basically illustrated to that particular group how the signature is underutilized. It can now be a very reliable and robust method to apply to other workflows and other activities. Now, it's not quite the same as endorsement detection. You know, something like this, a presence detection philosophy, is an approach where you look for presence of a particular field. And you can apply a lot of different intelligence to this to validate something is there. And that's a type of product that we plug into on things like remote deposit capture items to make sure that there's a valid endorsement on them, or transactions that come over the teller, right? But when it comes to applying a true authentication, you need to use the backbone of the system you have in place with all those profiles and use that as a mechanism to validate our traditional check workflows, okay? But also look at some of these non-check workflows. And so there are some certain areas where you could use an authentication against the deposit ticket, or a customer signs it and you validate it real time that it matches the profiles right there at the teller line. You could also use it for loan and credit card type of applications, contracts and notaries, and even moving into the electronic world, some online verification. So these are all potentially areas that you can leverage the technology even further And, you know, it's really interesting because we'd really like to get your feedback on this one. Has your organization considered extending an automated signature verification process to any of those applications or workflows we mentioned, to loan apps, to credit card applications, to anything there? So answer, the red is yes, we're actually in the process of doing something like that. The blue is yes, we'd like to evaluate it and are evaluating it. No, but it would be something that would be ideal that you'd love to pursue. And lastly, the green, not really a consideration. You don't think your organization would be that interested in something like that. So let's wait here for, again, just a few seconds. Some of the responses are still building. Kind of an interesting one here. This is, you know, there's some challenges with implementing workflows like this because many times you have silos within the organization and you have to kind of break those silos. But let's share the results with you now. And I think, you know, maybe not unexpectedly, no, you haven't considered it, but it would be ideal. I would fully agree, you know, and I think that trying to build an implementation and a program to overcome those challenges is really the step that would need to be taken for that. And that's something that if you want to have a dialogue with us afterwards, after the webinar, we'd certainly be open to that. So, you know, this kind of illustrates the concept of trying to look at these silos and figure out what features that you can activate within each silo. That's really the beauty of having a system that's kind of an enterprise accessibility for these other applications and for these other types of documents. So you can use this as a potential template moving forward or feed us some questions afterwards. You know, when you look at it from the check side, again, you know, we illustrated that example of a dollar amount out of range. And so in the fraud prevention world, there's a detection process, and then there's also regular deposit operation functions. And so we always have to carefully look at each one of those. What are the needs of each one, and how can the pieces of technology support each one of the goals of these functions? And so there again, you can look to integrate that all from the same platform. Jody Pratt's concept here as an illustration is one that we would really consider you, or really recommend you considering. You know, this is an environment where a check can be deposited at the Bank of First Deposit in the morning, hit these paying banks with some system implemented, and then get a result back within a couple of hours, whether or not just to delay those funds for an extra day. I think that's basically all people would need, would be to give an extra day to your review team to really minimize some of that deposit fraud. So, again, to start slowly, you pick one or two of your paying banks, work with them as a partnership, and get rolling there. So overall, that kind of rolls into what is the strategy for all your workflows, you know, leveraging it not only from a silo perspective and breaking the silos, but identifying each particular point, each particular shortcoming within the workflows. This illustrates that in the green quadrants, you have the strongest capabilities and the easiest mechanisms to implement these new technologies. The yellow in deposit frauds, it's a little bit harder, but certainly there are ways to do it. And also in the red areas, a little bit more difficult, but some added value capabilities. So in closing, what we'd like to say is that, you know, I think we'd all sit here and say, you know, the signature is probably underutilized. Let's take some of these new ideas and let's figure out ways to implement them. You know, man and machine will definitely be working together. I think a good example of that is when you have a credit card type of transaction that's flagged, that still needs some kind of validation, some verification. So that will always potentially be the case, at least in the short term, but there are ways to automatically delay the payment so that it can be handled more on an optimal level. Implementing this, of course, can be done in many different ways, and that's really the nuance of trying to make it as efficient as possible. And last but not least, testing it out. You know, this is a concept that you can do a proof of concept on. There's also a lot of other data points that we can provide you along with Periscript that kind of describes here the anticipated results. So if you'd like some more of those, feel free to reach out for us. So questions, and then we'll wrap things up here. We do have a question. The question is, does the solution have the ability to incorporate signature restrictions? Example, two signers required for over $10,000 into its analysis. Okay? Yes, that is a capability. It's kind of a dual capability because I think Periscript has some of that built into their product. As well as with Sereno, what we do is we have the profile of the account that enables you to identify which accounts are set up with two-signer restrictions, and you can assign dollar amounts. So it's more like a profile application feature rather than a pure algorithmic capability. Okay? So that's the answer to that one. Greg, I've got one other question here. The question is, I think your best answer, does this technology, is it anywhere close to the technology used in like tablets for handwriting recognition?
Is it anywhere near close? Well, it's actually handwriting recognition on tablets uses a similar type of technique to understand strokes. But the difference really is that when you're doing online recognition, and so let's correlate that to online signature verification and not the image-based piece of it. When you're collecting that information, it's interactive, and the software can collect things like the slant of the pen, the speed of the pen stroke, the weight of it. It has access to a lot more information that enable the software to fingerprint the signature. So, yes, the summation is for verification, it is very similar in terms of the approach.
Okay, good deal. Thank you very much. So with that, I think we'll move on then to our final polling question. Please rank today's webinar based on how beneficial it was for you. Your feedback is greatly appreciated here. The red is awesome. It made your day. The blue is very good. I certainly learned something. The yellow is average, not a life changer, but good stuff. The green is below average, a bit disappointing. And lastly, poor is, I think the prize drawing was the best. So for those folks, hang around, you can still win, all right? So a little final moment of delay here for us to get those final results in. And righty, so thank you very much for that. I'm going to close the polls. And I'll just say that, we'll throw it up there. No problem there. Looks like very good. I learned something good. So it was designed to be informative. And for those of you who made your day, I'm glad we could help out. You know, these are the things that we live for, right? Webinars and image analysis. So good stuff. All right. Finally, to wrap up the conference or wrap up the webinar, we have two more drawings. Nicole, turn that random name generator on with the machine. Beep, 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 beep. And who are the final two winners? And let's make sure that they're online.
For our final two winners, we have Kim Cooper and Melissa Gonzalez.
Okay. And those folks are online right now?
Yes.
All right. And who are they with?
We have Kim Cooper of American Bank Center and Melissa Gonzalez of PNC.
Okay, good deal. Well, thank you, everyone. It was really our pleasure to present you with this information. You'll be getting an email tomorrow with the white paper attached. Feel free to stay logged in and download some of those other materials that are online on the upper right-hand side where you can get to the handouts icon. And if you have any other questions, let me know or feel free to touch base with our business partners at DSS and Memento, and look for that email tomorrow. So thank you very much, and have a fantastic day.